Adventure and new friends are what awaits you in Starfleet, the world's largest Star Trek fan club. Starfleet, the International Star Trek Fan Association, is celebrating its 45th anniversary, and with over 4,000 members in 75 countries, it offers camaraderie, educational and philanthropy opportunities, and a unique membership experience modeled on the Starfleet organization from the TV shows and movies. To start your adventure today, visit www.sfi.org.
Hey guys, what's going on? You are listening to This Week in Geeks, Future Imperfect, brought to you by the good folks over at sfi.org, Starfleet, the world's largest Star Trek online fan club. And well, guys, we've been on shore leave over the last couple of weeks. We've been enjoying our vacation, as it were. But we got something extra special today. I had a really good friend of mine hook me up with one of the principal actors and directors over on the fan project Star Trek Renegades. Now, this is a guy you may recognize from many television projects. He's also done a fair chunk of video game voice acting, but you're mainly going to know him from Star Trek Voyager. I'm talking about Tim Russ, the guy who played Lieutenant Commander Tuvok on Star Trek Voyager. Without any further ado, let's welcome Tim to the show.
Glad to be here. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, it's quite the honor. I gotta say, it's kind of hard not to fanboy on this just a little bit because, well, you were one of my favorite characters on the show, and well, it's a pleasure to be able to talk to you about this really cool fan project I found out about last year. So, Tim, for those of you that don't know what Star Trek Renegades is, what is the project in a nutshell?
Well, in a nutshell, the project is based on sort of an offshoot of Section 31, which has only been mentioned a few times in the past. So it's like a, I want to say like a covert black ops kind of operation, but with a cast and crew of characters who are somewhat rambunctious and not necessarily get along with each other all the time. And some of whom have their own motives for coming on board. So they are sort of roguish in their style and their appearance and all that good stuff and their behavior. It does incorporate some of the characters that we are already familiar with, although they may be slightly different than you remember them. It takes place 11 years beyond Voyager. So, but their mission in this case is definitely noble, and it's sort of put together by Tuvok and Chekhov for it to take place, because it's absolutely necessary. It has to happen. So it's just a sacrifice as to how much we go by the book and how much we don't go by the book in order to achieve the goal.
So, Tim, one of the things that I wanted to ask you particularly about this is, I know you directed Of Gods and Men. How are you approached for kind of Renegades, as it's carrying on to what I consider the true canonical universe that is separated from the J.J. Abrams kind of reboot verse?
Well, the main thing, like I said, is we're not doing it. It isn't in fact a reboot, because it takes place ahead of Voyager, and our whole goal is to try to make it look and feel different than anything we've seen before. Certainly different than the series that have been on since TNG through Enterprise. We want to change the way it looks, the way it feels, you know, the style in which it's shot, you know, all these things. And we're introducing a new alien race in here of bad guys. So we're not tinkering with interdimensional timelines as JJ has done with the features, and it is not a prequel. So there's two things right off the bat that we're sort of dealing with right now. We're dealing with a timeline that we left off at, about 11 years ahead of that timeline. So the only liberties we're taking essentially are in terms of style and characters. They're a lot more edgy, a lot tougher, a lot more rough, a lot more grizzled, a lot more, you know, ragged around the edges. And we're also taking, we're also talking about the style and the way in which we accomplish the goal may be a little bit, you know, off the books. Like I said, that's the basic idea.
Now, the fact that, like you said, this is more kind of rough around the edges, not exactly, say, your dad's Star Trek, so to speak.
Yeah.
Was this something that particularly attracted you to the project in order to direct it?
Well, I, discussed with the writers at the very beginning It would have been Jack Trevino, it would have been Ethan Hawke and Sky Conway, all sort of collaborated on the story. And as they ran it by me also, you know, I gave them my input on certain things. But basically, we all came to the agreement that if we're going to make this project, which was essentially written from scratch, let's do something different with it. You know, the whole idea was to do something different. The whole idea was to break it up. The whole idea was to think outside the box and push the envelope on what we could get away with in terms of style. And that's really the idea here. Some of the technology we'll be using has not been used in the Star Trek series before this. Like I said, the look and feel of the characters initially, you know, this is a pilot presentation. It's not a, you know, really designed as a feature film. It's a pilot presentation for series. So ultimately, we would be setting up, you know, an ongoing story. And that's what this is all about.
Now, one of the things that I think might be a challenge, specifically because you're dealing with a property like Star Trek, how do you think directing Star Trek differs from, say, other kind of sci-fi properties?
Well, it's not that much different, really. It all depends on, at the end of the day, it all depends on your script and your budget. That's what determines what and how you shoot anything. It's just how much money do you have to work with, and what's your script. You know, if your script is, you know, a quiet, cerebral sort of sci-fi piece, that's going to dictate how it's shot and how it's cast and the tone of the whole thing. If it's something that's all action-oriented, i.e. Star Wars, something like that, now you're talking about, you know, again, a different style, a piece. So it all depends on the script. You know, how much money you have to work with on the script, et cetera, et cetera, was definitely going to dictate, you know, what decisions I make, you know, in terms of shooting, and, you know, in terms of equipment, what I can get away with, what I have to cheat, you know, that kind of thing. So the budget is important, and the script definitely makes a difference as to what kind of story it's going to be.
Now, you were mentioning budget there. What's it like to go from having the huge Paramount-style budget to the smaller one? Like I said, you may have to cheat a little bit here and there. Do you think that forces you to be more creative or to maybe tweak the script here and there? Do you think it makes a better storyline by being forced to do something on a smaller budget?
Well, you know, at the end of the day, it certainly costs a lot less money and time and energy to take a paragraph out of a script or to change that paragraph than it does to actually try to shoot the paragraph by leaving it in there. It's much easier to modify the story, and it's also, you know, as I've, you know, told the producers several times, we've had four or five versions of the script already. We may have another version or two before it's all over. And the whole point is that the audience has never seen version 1, 2, 3, and 4. They're only going to see the version that you release. So they're not going to know what you put in or took out, you know, to compromise for the budget. They're not going to have any idea because they've never seen the story before. They don't know the story. So, you know, if it was something in which the audience, you know, saw one version of the movie and then saw another version of the movie without certain scenes, well, then they would notice that. But then nobody's going to know because we haven't shot it yet. And at the end of the day, you know, if you don't have enough money to shoot one thing or another, you simply change it. You know, we have changed the script several times based on, you know, the initial script, which was very ambitious and which costs money. You can't shoot a science fiction project without money. I mean, it's just that simple. You have to have either money or some free resources, because nothing in the script is going to look like it takes place now. Everything in there has to look like it comes from another time period, unless you're doing a contemporary piece, like the Twilight Zone type piece that takes place in the here and now, and something just bizarre happens in the here and now. Then it's fine. You know, you can drive your regular car, you can wear your regular clothes out of the closet, you know, you can use your regular cell phone props and all those other things without having to, you know, worry about recreating everything that you look at or feel or touch, you know, walk into, whatever. It's very expensive shooting science fiction.
Now, one of the people that I've come to know from actually Star Trek Renegades behind the scenes is a guy named Scott Nakata. He does a lot of really cool props and everything.
Yeah.
Like, he built me one of those Mark II filming prop phasers, as well as a Voyager-style one.
I've had the good fortune to work with some very good key people in production. Well, the gods and men, and will be working with Ron Renegades. You know, everybody from, we've got special effects, we've got Michael Struck, we've got Chris Dawson, we've got costumes, Debbie Hartwell, we've got Scott Nakata on props. We have a solid first AD. I've got cameraman Tristan Bernard, who's who I shot with Gods and Men. He was a DP, worked with him on Gods and Men as well. Got some, and of course the writers I mentioned before. Everybody's on board, and it really makes a difference when you are, you know, producing a project like this. This is not, I want to say, a fan film in the sense that it's fans making the project. This isn't something somebody thrown together in their garage. This is produced by professionals, all professionals across the board, and people who make a living at their work. And I would say that the fans have financed this project through an online website, which did not exist when we did Gods and Men. Fans will be enjoying the film once it's finished. But as far as it being produced by fans, it's being produced by people who work in this business professionally, and they simply have signed on board to do this.
Now, speaking of professionals, the mm-hmm. cast for this is honestly quite impressive. I mean, you've got Walter Koenig returning as Chekhov. You've got a lot of people who I've seen in different horror movies, different other sci-fi properties. But most notably, you have two Voyager alumni with you in Garrett Wong and Robert Picardo. What's it like to work with them again to continue the storyline that you guys finished X amount of years ago?
Well, It's always, well, like I said, it's always good to be able to work with people who are pros. You know, if you're working with pros, you know, you show up on the morning to shoot, and they've already had the script for some time, and they bring to the table a lot of really very cool surprises and elements to the characters that sometimes we discuss beforehand and sometimes we don't. Sometimes they just show up and it's a big surprise as to what they're going to do, and a lot of times that's a kind of a kick and a thrill for me. You know, to roll camera, and all of a sudden we get some really cool stuff coming. I don't know if we're going to have a full table read beforehand or if we're just going to come in and start rocking and rolling on the day, but I expect that working with these guys is going to be an absolute pleasure, as it was on Gods and Men, with more and more surprises in terms of how they perform, what they pull out of their hat in terms of nuances for the characters. Our characters from Voyager will be somewhat different than they were on the series, and that's just a little hint of how this particular project is not going to be the same as what I've seen before, but they're going to be a little bit different. My character Tuvok will also be in it, and my character will basically be the same, but you know, Bob Picardo's character and Gary Wong's character will be somewhat different.
Now, as we start to kind of wind down this interview, Tim, I think as per the Indiegogo, I think things end on what, October 2nd it is? Or no, sorry, September 13th.
Yeah.
But by that time, what are some of the stretch goals that you guys would like to maybe see do? I mean, as of this recording, literally right now, you guys have raised over $27,000. How much money would you guys like to see raised to deliver your director's vision of this, so to speak?
Well, it is more so resources in terms of, in this case, it may be more so in terms of post-production. We have some CGI that's got to be done and things like that. Some of this money is going towards that, also towards costumes, and a couple of other areas, also makeup. Makeup, we have to have a lot of people on board to do the special effects makeup for the alien characters, and we have a lot of alien characters running around in this piece, so we need extra bodies, extra people there to do the work. And again, that's because they're all professionals. You know, they have to be paid for their time, et cetera, and the materials that they use. So the primary thing in terms of shooting is resources. So the more money we have, and I'd say anywhere between $40,000 and $60,000 would be great to raise in this section of fundraising that we're doing now. would really help us out a lot. I mean, those guys would be happy with a half a million, but whatever we can get, realistically, if we get up to 60, we'd be great. And now, because, again, the primary thing that people have to understand is that it's very expensive to shoot this stuff, you know, special effects makeup and about, you know, if we've got six aliens working that day, we've got to have, you know, seven people doing makeup. Because each person, the alien character, if it's heavy, takes a couple of hours. So in order to shoot a 10, 11, 12-hour day, you know, those guys come in 2 hours earlier, than, including the actors, than when you shoot. So you got to have enough people to cover. If you have only have two people, that's going to be 2 hours per character. If I need all five of them on the set at the same time, I need five people making them up. That's what we're looking at here as far as, you know, just some of the challenges, not to mention building sets. We have to build sets. We have to modify sets that already exist. We have to change over a couple of sets from one type of look to another so that they're being utilized for two different things. It is, you know, it's a big freight train barreling down the track once you get going. And our money is finite. You know, whatever we have is what we have to work with. And cost overruns can average 15% on any film. So,
oh, wow.
You know, you can't just go back to the well, you know, and say, I need a few more bucks, like you can with an independent financier. This is money that's already in the bank, and it has a finite point to it. So once it's over, it's over. So you got to come in under that limit, you know.
Well, I'm really hoping you guys are able to reach that 200,000 goal. I'm just looking at the new bridge you guys would have for the Renegade ship, and man, yeah, that would be really cool to see.
Yeah, you know, the way we have it right now, we're going to be sort of redesigning a couple of things with an existing ship set that we're using. We're going to add some materials to it. We're going to add some pieces to it. We're going to add, you know, the layout of the chairs and seats and how it's going to work. It's a cool concept. I like the way we've discussed doing it. And we have the other bridge set for the Federation ship that we're using. We have a planet location, a series of caves. We have, there's also Starfleet. We have a number of sets that we have to build, and we have a refinery we have to put together with a green screen. We've got pieces for that refinery that we have to build and then put in front of a green screen. We have, you know, special effects for monitors and consoles and displays, and I mean, the thing goes on and on, you know. This is the stuff that, you know, people expect to see, and in terms of science, this type of science fiction is period piece type science fiction. So as much money as we can raise, is we will be using every single dime for it.
Well, I gotta say, Tim, I really hope this actually does turn into a full online series and isn't just a pilot, because honestly, this Trek universe is my Trek universe. I'm really happy to see Section 31 getting a little bit more love. Yet another female captain is awesome, because Janeway is literally my favorite captain. So
sure.
I'm really excited for you guys to do this. So people have until September 13th, and no matter what, you guys are going forward?
Oh, yes. We have, we are definitely scheduled to go in October 2nd. It will definitely happen. We've already got everybody on board. We've got the spaces reserved. We've got construction crews that are in place right now to do the set building. It will happen. There's no question about it. And again, I've got such good people that I'm working with that we can get away with making something look good for very little. We did it for Gods and Men, and we certainly can do it on this project here. There were a lot of things we did not have in Gods and Men for at least 8 of the 11 days that we shot, and we made it work. We had good sets that we used. That's the core. Once we have that, and so we've got an outstanding costumer, the characters will look really good on camera. And we've got, the props and things like that. Once we put those elements together, you know, I don't need, you know, all the fanciness of cranes and this and that and all the other things. That, you know, I can work with just a camera and a handheld, man. I can take this thing to the next level very easily. And I intend to do a lot of that kind of stuff anyway, so.
it's going to be really awesome when everything all comes together. And the fact that you don't have to have all the fancy studio-type stuff to make something truly fantastic that is definitely television-worthy, that's awesome, Tim. Tim, I wish you the best of success with this role. Guys, if you want to check out this, there's a link in the episode post, Star Trek Renegades. You can fund this on Indiegogo. So far, they've raised over $27,000. Let's get them up towards 60. In fact, come on, random billionaire. Let's get them up to 200,000. I want this bridge. It looks cool. So, Tim, thank you so much for spending time with us today.
My pleasure, man. Thank you for having me on. All right,
guys, that was my interview with Tim Russ, director and star of Star Trek Renegades. Like I said, guys, go check this out. And if you want props from the movie, you can contribute and even get those via some of the perks they have set up over there. Also, check out Scott Nakata's website. I'm going to put a link below to see some of the prop work he does on this. I own some of his props. They are friggin' awesome. He actually was building me a Mass Effect pistol at one point, and the prototype looked awesome. So, guys, go check that out. So, guys, I'll have more interviews from Star Trek Renegades leading up to the finale on September 13th, but go fund them, please. I'll be dropping some money in the bucket myself. So, guys, until next time for Future Imperfect, I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd saying, live long and prosper.